In a land far away and a long time ago, the Hebrew people are being held under the thumb of Pharaoh. They are slaves in Egypt. And along comes Moses, and he says, "Let my people go." Or rather, God speaks through Moses. And as we looked at last week, it takes 10 plagues for Pharaoh to get the memo. But finally, the people of God are released from Pharaoh's clutches. And they ride off in a golden chariot, and they live happily ever after the end. Is that how it goes? No, that is not. Most definitely not how it goes, right? Freed from Egypt, they celebrate their victory for sure as they walk through the Red Sea and the Egyptian army is defeated. And in Exodus 15, we actually have the Song of Moses, as it's recorded, as he leads Israel in a celebration, and it's 18 verses long. On the tail of it, his sister Miriam sings a song. It's only one verse. Who says women are wordier than men? Exodus 15, Miriam just needs one verse, verse 21, where she sings, "Sing to the Lord, for he is highly exalted, both horse and driver. He is hurled into the sea." It's a great victory. But after walking through the water, the very next verse, things begin to change. Exodus 15, starting in verse 22. "Then Moses led Israel from the Red Sea, and they went into the desert of Shur. For 3 days they traveled in the desert without finding water. When they came to Marah, they could not drink its water because it was bitter. That's why the place is called Marah. So the people grumbled against Moses, saying, 'What are we to drink?'" In one verse, they're singing God's praises. And three verses later, they're grumbling and they're complaining. Can you believe these people? After all God has done for them, they're complaining? We would never do such a thing, would we? Of course, it just takes an honest moment and a chuckle for us to realize we have our Israelite moments too, right? I mean, let's be honest. You and I both know our way around a complaint or two, don't we? I mean, for real, when you hit the wilderness wall, are you the one throwing confetti? I doubt it. All through this section of Scripture, Exodus 15, 16, and 17, the murmuring and the testing and the grumbling continue. And then it gets worse. Exodus 17, verses 1 and 2. "The whole Israelite community set out from the desert of Sin, traveling from place to place as the Lord commanded. They camped at Rephidim, but there was no water for the people to drink. So they quarreled with Moses and said, 'Give us water to drink.'" They're quarreling with Moses. This same word is used four verses later in Exodus 21, and it's preceded by a fight. So they're ready to rumble. The people of Israel are ready to go at Moses. And I think what we see here is the reality that the wilderness tends to strip us down. Wilderness tends to show you and me what we're made of. Deserts have a way of defining us. Hunger and thirst really have a way of showing what you're actually really hungry and thirsty for. In fact, it's interesting to know you could read the Bible just through the lens of wilderness and to see how many times it pops up and how many of the key characters of the Bible spend their time in the wilderness, if not literally, certainly spiritually. And if you live this life of faith long enough, you know that you also will spend time in the wilderness. And here's the deal. You don't usually have a choice about it, do you? Wilderness moments tend to find you. You don't have to go and find them. And the biggest question ends up being, how are you going to respond when they come? In his book, Emotionally Healthy Spirituality, Peter Scazzaro lists some wilderness moments. I took his list and I kind of adapted it and added some as well. And I'm going to give you a bunch. And I just want you to listen to all these wilderness moments. And I want you to just do a mental checklist of how many you have experienced, okay? All right, here we go. Job loss. Death of a close friend or family member. A chronic health condition. A difficult church experience. No doubt not here, somewhere else, I'm sure. A betrayal. A shattered dream, the inability to have a child, a wayward child, an abusive childhood, a deep desire to marry, a difficult marriage, divorce, a forbidden attraction, a fractured family, a relationship that just didn't work out, a major accident, a general discouragement or depression, questions you can't answer, and a joy that you just can't seem to find. How many of these have you gone through? How many of you are going through some of these right now? You see, in the wilderness, it's so easy to forget what God has done. It's very easy in the wilderness to think all there is sand and rock and wind and desolation and not much else. Years ago, our family had a trip out west, and we had the opportunity to visit Death Valley in California. How many of you have been to Death Valley? Okay, it looks like this. It's a certain kind of beauty, but it's a dry, arid, desolate kind of beauty. It looks like this, but here's what it actually feels like. That's what it feels like, right? Especially this time of year. I mean, some of the hottest temperatures in America are recorded in Death Valley. Even if you haven't been through Death Valley literally, some of you have been through it spiritually, emotionally, or at least the valley of the shadow of death. And in those dry and desert times, you know, our vision can get really narrow. When we go through hardships and struggles, it's often really hard to see past the moment we're in. Israel in the wilderness certainly had limited vision. Listen to how it's described in Exodus 16, 2 and 3. In the desert, the whole community grumbled against Moses and Aaron. The Israelites said to them, "If only we had died by the Lord's hand in Egypt. There we sat around pots of meat and ate all the food we wanted. But you've brought us out into this desert to starve the entire assembly to death." As their complaining continues, so much so, they say they wish they had actually died in Egypt, where life apparently was so good and food was so plentiful. In other words, not only they're complaining, now they're irrational too. Maybe that's why we call them the children of Israel. Life was really better back in Egypt? It's almost as if they've forgotten where they were. How about you? Do you remember where you were before Jesus? Some of you clearly remember that because it's a very clear line in the sand. But for others of us, it's a different story, isn't it? I mean, there are a number of us here who could say, "I was born on a Tuesday and I was in church that next Sunday." And you've been here ever since. But still others of us, if we're honest, we would say, "You know, I've been in and I've been out. And I've been in and maybe out and in and out again a little bit." And maybe there are some of you here this morning that might actually say, "I don't really know where in the desert I am." But perhaps the easiest way for all of us to look at life before Christ, BC, is to pay attention to the glimpses of that side of ourselves that we're still going to get just about every day. I can look at my own life and see selfishness, possessiveness, laziness, and impatience. And that was just yesterday. And when I see that side of me, it reminds me I don't want to go back to life pre-Jesus. I don't want to live the BC version of me. In fact, I actually, on my better days, and when I'm standing in front of you, I'm going to say this because I believe it, even when I don't feel it, I would rather have the hard and difficult life of the unknown in the wilderness with Jesus than settle for the known in the comfortable without him. I got to remind myself of that, though, just about every day. How about you? Do you trust the God who is faithful in the desert, in the places where things are out of your control? Or are you more likely to trust in yourself in the places where you imagine you think you can control? If so, tell me how that's working for you. The people are on their way to Mount Sinai where they will receive the law, the teaching, and the guidance that will become their way of life. And if they're going to take on this way of life that God is giving them, they're first going to have to trust the God who's giving it to them, even in the wilderness, especially in the wilderness. And what they find in Exodus is that their God is the one who provides manna in the wilderness. Let's pick it up in Exodus 16. And I want you, as you listen to how many times one particular word shows up. You'll catch it. It's pretty obvious. Exodus 16, starting in verse 6. So Moses and Aaron said to all the Israelites, "In the evening you will know that it was the Lord who brought you out of Egypt, and in the morning you will see the glory of the Lord, because he has heard your grumbling against him. Who are we that you should grumble against us?" Moses also said, "You will know that it was the Lord when he gives you meat to eat in the evening and all the bread you want in the morning, because he has heard your grumbling against him. Who are we? You are not grumbling against us, but against the Lord." Then Moses told Aaron, "Say to the entire Israelite community, 'Come before the Lord, for he has heard your grumbling.'" While Aaron was speaking to the whole Israelite community, they looked toward the desert, and there was the glory of the Lord appearing in the cloud. The Lord said to Moses, "I've heard the grumbling of the Israelites. Tell them, at twilight you will eat meat, and in the morning you will be filled with bread. Then you will know that I am the Lord your God." Two themes in this section. I think you picked them up, right? Israelites grumbling, and even so, God's provision. In other words, there are two things in life I think you can count on. Death and taxes, I guess so, yeah, sure. But grumbling and God's providing. Those are two things I think we can still count on today. People complain, God provides. And he provides for the Israelites in the wilderness, we're told, manna, literally bread from heaven, as it were. But it comes with two commandments, which are really two lessons, two invitations. The first is to gather only enough for each day. They're going to have to learn to trust that their God provides every single day. Gather today only what you need today and trust that God will be there tomorrow and the next day and the next day. But then the Sabbath comes along and God says, don't even go out on the Sabbath. You gather enough for 2 days the day before. So they've got to trust God in two ways. Anybody want to guess how they respond to this? You have people going out and gathering more than they need for a day. Surprise, surprise. And you have people going out on the Sabbath going, where's the manna? Surprise, surprise. And in both cases, they learn that trying to do things on their own and in their own way literally adds not one piece of bread to their pantry. They simply have to learn to trust God for their daily bread. The book of Deuteronomy describes life at the end of the wilderness journey. It's where the people are literally poised to go into the promised land. And as they're about to enter, we hear the voice of Moses say these words in Deuteronomy chapter 8. "Be careful to follow every command I'm giving you today so that you may live and increase and may enter and possess the land the Lord promised on oath to your ancestors. Remember how the Lord your God led you all the way in the wilderness these 40 years to humble and test you in order to know what was in your heart, whether or not you would keep his commands. He humbled you, causing you to hunger and then feeding you with manna, which neither you nor your ancestors had known, to teach you that man does not live on bread alone, but on every word that comes from the mouth of the Lord." The wilderness is going to test you, that's for sure. It's going to humble you, and it's going to reveal your hungers. And ultimately, the wilderness is going to ask you, are you hungry for what fills belly and body? Or are you really hungry for what fills heart and mind? We don't live by bread alone. Seems like I heard someone else say that in history. Jesus said that. Anybody remember where Jesus is speaking those words? Where he quotes these words? Where is he when he's doing it? He's in, surprise, surprise, he's in the wilderness. In Matthew chapter 4, we read of that story. You guys know this, right? Jesus is led by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. After fasting, in his case, 40 days and 40 nights, he was hungry. The tempter came to him and said, "If you are the Son of God, tell these stones to become bread." "Jesus, make your own manna." Jesus answered, "It is written, man shall not live on bread alone, but on every word that comes from the mouth of God." Jesus is in the wilderness for 40 days and 40 nights. And when he is tested to make his own manna, what does he do? He quotes Deuteronomy 8. He quotes this example where he recognizes that there's a deeper hunger he has And it's for the will and the way of God. What about you? What about me? What are we really hungry for? I don't know about you, but I think I'm learning that the bread of attention or respect or wealth or accomplishment or people thinking I'm so important or special or in my own mind thinking those things, that bread may taste good for a while, but I'm learning that I have to go back to that buffet day after day after day after day. It never quite fully satisfies me. And what Jesus shows us is that the bread we must have, the bread that really does sustain, is the word that comes from the mouth of God. Perhaps this is why, just two chapters after Jesus has his own wilderness experience, he tells us to pray, Lord, give us our daily bread. Lord, give us what we need today, just like the Israelites. What do I need today? Am I really going to trust that God's going to provide? Are you really going to say, God, I trust you for today. I don't know about tomorrow. Yesterday's gone, but I'm going to trust you today. Because when you're in the wilderness, that's all you got. When you're in the wilderness, you can't make your own bread. Jesus could have made bread from stones, and he chose not to. We certainly can't. In the wilderness, you have to decide, am I going to trust God or not? Everything is stripped down to that. And perhaps this is one of the biggest challenges of the wilderness. You either learn to trust God for what you need to survive, or you just end up complaining like Israel that life's not fair. And you take matters into your own hands. So what daily bread do you need today, right now? You know, I hate to admit it, but I think I learn most about the daily bread I need when I'm in the wilderness. You know what I mean? Like, I would love for the learning to take place on the sand, sure, but on the sands of a nice beach. I don't want the sands of the wilderness to teach me the hard lessons of life and dependence on God, but I don't know about you, but I don't tend to learn it as well on the sands of the beach. I need the sands of the wilderness, its grittiness, its stripped down nature to show me how much I need God. Psalm 78 is a long psalm, and a part of it is it's recounting the story of the wilderness journey and Israel's lack of faith. And in Psalm 78, verse 19, this question is asked by the people. Can God really spread a table in the wilderness? And the question is asked in the context, we don't think he can, right? That's not what can happen. And so their lack of faith shows up even in this psalm. But the psalmist makes it clear, the Bible makes it clear that our God is the God who specializes in throwing a dinner party in the desert. Our God is the one who does set a table in the wilderness. In fact, that's the best place he does his work. We worship a God who specializes in showing up in Death Valley, in providing a feast of manna we could never provide for ourselves. I was driving one time, and I noticed the car in front of me had a frame around its license plate, and the frame said, "You are not forgotten." Except, for some reason, I noticed this because the frame was kind of covered up, and the word "not" was obscured. You couldn't really see the word "not," so it looked like the frame said, "You are forgotten." Not the message I'm sure they intended. But it makes me think about the fact that there are times in our lives where maybe that's exactly what we feel. Where in our wilderness moments, we wonder, am I forgotten? Am I alone in this? Where, if we're honest, there are times where that "not" seems obscured, where God says you are not forgotten, and yet we wonder. In your worst days in the desert, it can absolutely feel like that. Hungry in the wilderness, parched in a barren land, just like Israel. And in this section in Exodus 15, it actually kind of comes to a conclusion with this great question in Exodus 17, verse 7. Is the Lord among us or not? Is the Lord among us or not? I mean, that's the question, right? I'm assuming that's why you're here on 11 o'clock on a Sunday morning, right? That's what you're doing here, right? Either because you know the answer to that question or you really need to know the answer to that question. is God among you and me or not in what we're going through? Because here's the thing. It isn't just the wilderness moments that strip us down. We can also ask that question when things are going well. Israel had that same experience back in Deuteronomy chapter 8 as the people stand at the edge of the promised land. Let me pick it up in verse 6 and listen to the two experiences that are described. Observe the commands of the Lord your God, walking in obedience to him and revering him. For the Lord your God is bringing you into a good land, a land with brooks, streams, and deep springs gushing out into the valleys and hills. How must that have sounded to people parched in the wilderness? A land with wheat and barley, vines and fig trees, pomegranates, olive oil and honey. A land where bread will not be scarce and you will lack nothing. A land where the rocks are iron and you can dig copper out of the hills. Now, why does he talk about this? Because he says, when you've eaten and are satisfied, praise the Lord your God for the good land he has given you. Be careful that you don't forget the Lord your God, failing to observe his commands, his laws, and his decrees that I'm giving you this day. Otherwise, when you eat and are satisfied, when you build fine houses and settle down, and when your herds and flocks grow large, and your silver and gold increase, and all you have is multiplied, then your heart will become proud, and you will forget the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. In other words, it wasn't just the wilderness where Israel was challenged and tested. When they had nothing, when they were stripped down to bare essentials, they needed to cry out to God. But now in the reverse, as they prepare to go into the land of promise with this description of bounty and beauty, they also are in a dangerous place. Because now they could say, hey, look at how good our life is. Look what we've done. Who needs God? Is God in our midst? That's a great question to ask when life is hard. But it's also a really important question to ask when life is good. The story of Israel reminds us that in the days full of desert, and if we can say it this way, in the days full of desert, we still need to remember that God is among us, that we ultimately need his bread to fulfill us. His hand to guide us. We need his kingdom to come and his will to be done. One more Old Testament reference. The prophet Joel, just a few pages long, he's speaking to the people when locusts have stripped the land clean. Is he talking physically, spiritually? I tend to think both. Where Israel has just been wiped clean in every sense of the word. Even so, the prophet Joel has these words to say in chapter 2, verse 25, I will repay you for the years the locusts have eaten. This is God speaking. The great locust and the young locust, the other locusts and the locust swarm, my great army that I sent among you. You will have plenty to eat until you are full, and you will praise the name of the Lord your God who has worked wonders for you. Never again will my people be shamed. Then you will know that I am in Israel, that I'm in your midst, that I am the Lord your God, and that there is no other. Never again will my people be shamed. You've known hunger, God says, but now you'll know plenty, and you will know that I'm in your midst. And this is the answer to the question in Exodus 17, verse 7. Is God among us? And the prophet Joel says, yes. He's among us in the barren times, and he's among us in the bountiful times. And how do we know? How do we know God's among us? It's not by the amount of bread in our bellies or the wealth in our wallets. We know because of what God says next through the prophet Joel, picking it up in verse 28. And afterward, I will pour out my spirit on all people. Your sons and daughters will prophesy. Your old men will dream dreams. Your young men will see visions. Even on my servants, both men and women, I will pour out my spirit in those days. And as many of you know, those are the very first words of scripture that Peter quotes on the very first day of the church. Of all the scriptures he could have quoted, Peter pulls these out to say, the Spirit has come and he is going to fill all people. Young and old, male and female, rich and poor, those who are new to Jesus and those who've been around forever, we have the promise that we are filled with the Spirit of God. And this very Spirit points us to Jesus, who is the bread of life and who is living water. As Jesus himself says in John 6:35, I am the bread of life. The one who comes to me will not hunger, and the one who trusts in me will never thirst. What I think that tells us is this. No matter what wilderness you are going through or will go through, Jesus is there. No matter what your deepest hungers and your deepest thirsts, Jesus is there. No matter what your daily life looks like, Jesus is there. No matter what discouragements or difficulties you face, Jesus is there. No matter what you are going through or will go through, no matter how dry the desert or how full your life feels, you need at the very center of your life the one who, the only one who can, set a table in the wilderness.